Wednesday, October 31st, 2007, Upon Further Review, episode number 49. Well, Halloween is come and gone again, and we promise there won't be anything scary in this episode, just our usual blend of reviews and entertainment. In fact, we're not scared of anything, not even those opinions that go bump in the night. To those things we say, bring it on. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And this is episode number 49. I want to welcome everyone in and thank you guys for listening as always and say hello to everyone. And we want to wish everybody a happy Halloween.
That's right. So how many did we get? Two?
Oh, trick-or-treaters?
Yeah.
Well, we got four. I had a Superman, I had a princess, a fairy, and then a zombie with the mask off. So I'm assuming that was like a zombie in transition.
They don't get candy when the mask is off. They're supposed to put the mask back on they knock on the door.
I see. I gave one of them a 100 grand small mini candy bar.
Nice.
And I was like, you want a Hershey's or 100 grand? And the mother who's at the end of the path is just like, can you make that in the form of a check? It's like, yeah.
How many times have we heard that joke?
I was like, you're kid gets nothing. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't do that. But it was cool. We did get some trick-or-treaters. I think that's more than we had last time, because I don't think we had any trick-or-treaters last year.
I think our neighbors took care of them last time.
I see. So yeah. We had a few, and that was good. So that's great. We want to wish happy Halloween to everybody. And we would review it, except we've already reviewed it last year. So please check our listing and under reviewed items, and you can see where we reviewed it before.
Been there, done that, right.
So this week, before we get started on reviews, I just wanted to mention one comment that we got by our friend Drum Intellect, who wrote, great show as usual. You know, he's doing really well with his opinionated show, too. He's got a lot of episodes now, which is pretty neat. But he was saying, I said, great show as usual. I don't know about the first or third items, but I agree with you're great for Star Wars. And I mentioned it because he talks about a book called The Science of Star Wars, an astrophysicist's independent examination of space travel, aliens, planets, and robots as portrayed in the Star Wars films.
Okay, because I was asking if there was any... Any scientists that have spoken to the science of Star Wars.
Yeah, so apparently there is more stuff than I would have thought originally.
So I guess we'll see what that says.
And he said, I wonder if that sways your rating upward. And our answer is no. No, I'm just kidding. We'd have to look at it first. But no, we appreciate you letting us know about that. And it might sway it upwards. I don't know. It's quite possible. Okay, so we've got three things on the docket for tonight, as usual. And we're going to start out with reviewing Babies R Us. We'll explain why we're doing that as soon as we start reviewing it. But we're going to review the Babies R Us store.
Uh-huh.
Then we're going to review the World Series, which is just concluded. Concluded on Monday is when it actually finished.
Yep.
So it seems appropriate to talk about that.
Yep.
And then we will finish by talking about the Humanist Network News podcast, which was submitted to us for review and which we found very interesting. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. All right, so let's get started by talking about Babies R Us. And you may be thinking to yourself now, why would we be reviewing a store like Babies R Us? And that, I think, leads us to...
We can review anything. Why wouldn't we, Greg?
Yeah, right. We're just randomly casting about. We could have, you know, absolutely.
Maybe we've gone to a lot of baby showers recently.
That's true. But why would we do that, Clea? Well, the reason is that we have a new reviewer that is due in our household. Some of you may already have heard of this from us, but those of you who haven't, Clea is pregnant with our first child. And
30
our,
weeks.
Our child will be due January 8th. It is going to be a daughter, and no, we don't know the name yet. We had a
Any
name all picked out for a boy, but the female name, we are having more trouble
with.
Yeah,
we figured out the boy, and then we're like, we couldn't come up with a girl's name, so we said, oh, we'll wait and see. And
right.
Then they said, yeah, it's going to be a girl.
That's
we're
a good,
like,
oh. Of course, naturally. So that's the way that works.
Already
so,
she's making us work for it.
That's right. So we are very excited and pleased. We should say, I remember that when Stephen Marin from the Wicked Good podcast had this news, that they made a point of saying that they're not going to become a baby cast, and that's very much the way it is with us as well.
Right.
We are not going to become a baby cast. However,
that's why we've waited all this time.
Exactly, because we didn't want... Exactly. But on the other hand, we will certainly be happy to sort of talk about different things that we run into in the process of, you know...
If we think it pertains to a lot of different people.
Infancy and things like that. Right, exactly. But, you know, like I suppose if we have to go see the Wiggles for the first time, you know, we might have to review the Wiggles.
I don't know.
No, you don't think so?
I'm not going to... There's certain things that just...
We're not
I'm
going
sorry.
To the Wiggles. Okay. It sounds like a plan. But anyway...
Our child's going to have to learn really early that it's not all about them.
Our child is... You will have to like classical music. That's what you're going to like. Classical music concerts and the ballet. It'll be no fun for you. But anyway, so right. In the process of getting ready for this, of course, we had a baby shower, and we actually had Clea's baby shower last weekend with a lot of her relatives and friends came from out of town, which was great. Uh-huh. And we had our registry, our baby registry at Babies R Us. And let me tell you, you know, when we got married, this is the first time, of course, that we've, and hopefully last, that we've gotten married. So everything was new for us. And when we've had our first child, or preparing to have our first child, we've gone through, at least for me, I've learned all these things that I didn't know existed. Now, I knew that there were registries that existed at these places, but the stuff that they have available that you could buy at these places is really stunning. So you can find this, actually, you can find it, I think, if you go to ToysRUs.com, they have a link there to the Babies R Us.
If you enter in Babies R Us,
it'll just bring you to Toys R Us.
If you enter in www.babiesrus.com, and even if you, however you spell babies, if you spell babies B-A-B-I-E-S or babies B-A-B-Y-S.
How about B-E-B as in babies kids?
I don't know. I didn't try that. Either way, it's going to take you to the Babies R Us tab of ToysRUs.com.
Okay. So it's the same company. I think they also have like Kids R Us and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know if that
still
exists. I'm surprised Toys R Us, I mean, haven't we heard all these different things like Toys R Us is going bankrupt or
closing? I don't know. Maybe they're like
the
one toy store that isn't going to go under because they figured there's room for one. I have no idea. But
there were rumors, though, that they were going. I guess someone saved them. I don't know.
Apparently.
I think Babies R Us saved them.
It's all the babies that people go to. Because everybody, apparently everyone goes to this store. I mean, I'm sure there are certainly other baby stores around, but I think all of our friends have talked about at some point going to Babies R Us.
Again,
they?
It's a huge corporation, but it is all over the place, and the prices aren't ridiculous, and their selection is pretty good.
Yeah, they do have just about everything.
So, it survives.
Yeah, and so that's what happened here. And we've learned all the different brands, the Graco brand, and we've learned about Baby Bjorn and all these different things. And, of course, they have a baby registry as well. Their website, I think, is pretty well designed.
Their website, actually, I've went to a bunch of different... I also, you know, I did try to look at other baby registry websites.
Right.
I didn't like how they were designed. I didn't like how they were, I didn't find them very maneuverable. And then also, the great thing about Babies R Us is it's also got a bunch of stores.
Right.
So if you need to return something or exchange something, which you were really going to have to do when you have a baby,
yeah,
you can do it. If you buy some like Baby Universe or some other just online registry, it's going to be a much bigger pain in the butt to return things or exchange things.
Now, have we explained my plan?
Greg's cunning plan.
I have a cunning plan. See,
you're going to be disclosing a lot of things by talking about this plan.
Not really, no. Okay. Not really. Basically, the idea is Clea and I, we certainly do laundry regularly, but we don't do laundry, you know, every week. We normally do it every couple of weeks or something like that. And the basic issue is that when we have a child, we're aware that babies produce a lot of their diaper changes, and there are a lot of clothing changes associated with it. And so Clea was saying, you know, we're going to have to get used to doing our laundry, you know, every couple of days or every few days and everything. And I said, well, wait a minute. The better way to look at it is this. Let's calculate how many outfits a baby is going to go through in a given day. I figure, you know, five outfits. Now, I'm not talking diapers. I'm talking the outerwear, the outfits, right?
Right.
And then you multiply that times basically 30. So I assume four outfits a day, 30 days in a month. That means that we need 120 outfits. Now, thus far, we have only gotten, what, about 35, maybe?
Oh, no.
40?
After this baby shower, we are up to...
Maybe 50 outfits,
I didn't put any clothes on the registry.
And we got a lot anyway.
Because I knew people were going to buy clothes, because it's just so fun to buy baby clothes.
That's right. So we're talking about like 50.
We're close to 50 outfits.
So we're closing in. We're almost moving halfway there. I want to put one of those meters up on our site, you know, like one of those thermometer deals, like, you know, bring us to to Greg's dream.
I know all of you are thinking this. So just so you know, I've said this to him.
Yes.
That it's not just about changing the clothing. It's the clothing that is produced is going to smell.
As if we don't have airtight containers to put them in. Hello.
Oh my God.
And then we wash them. 120. I'm going to call it the 120 days to glory. The under 20 outfits of
and
glory.
And imagine that one day a week, you're doing laundry.
One day. I know. I'll just have, like, at that point, I'll make sure to have a really bad cold when I actually open them all up, and then we'll all, it'll all make sense.
Oh, you probably will get sick opening up all those after they've been sitting fermenting for 30 days.
Well, fermenting. All right. Well, maybe I'll have to make
it's
it every 15
bodily
days.
Fluids, Greg.
Well, I know that. I'm aware.
Sorry if I'm disgusting anyone.
But I hope not. Well, maybe we could. Can we get disposable clothes? How about that? Maybe they'll biodegrade. Can we get clothes that biodegrade along with the
other
stuff?
Why don't we win the lottery and then after she's done with that, we just toss it and get something new?
Oh, yeah, why didn't I think of that? All you have to do is win the lottery. Yeah. This all totally makes sense.
Then
anyway,
it doesn't matter.
I think we're going off
tangent.
Actually,
then, or we could hire someone to do the laundry for us. Actually.
If we won the lottery?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, you know, that's part of the dream.
So, featured items on Babies R Us today is Southern California wildfires click here to see more information about how your order may be affected.
Which really, when I think about South Carolina, when I think about Southern California wildfires, what I think about is how our order is going to be affected. Not the people out there who have wildfire problems.
They can take
problems.
Care of themselves.
I'm going to think about ourselves. I should say, by the way, that when you go to one of these Babies R Us stores, and again, I knew, of course, that these places existed. I had passed them on the highway many times, but I had never had reason to go into them. And they're large. Can I just say, they are large. They have more, I mean, I was completely unaware of how many different versions of breast pumps actually exist. I didn't know that there were this many. I did not know that this many different kind of strollers. And that's the problem too, right? Because as expectant parents, we're trying, you know, Clea and I being the people that we are who tend to do research, listeners to our show will appreciate this. We try to do research to find what's the best car seat, what's the best stroller, and also do so within some kind of a reasonable budget since we clearly have not won the lottery yet. And it is unbelievable how many different choices, options, selections, concepts, this companies.
In that mind, another reason why we bring up this site is that I did find that the review segments, the consumer reviews of each product were actually pretty good. I did actually feel like these were actual consumers and not just people coming in and saying, this product is great. I loved it because it had this feature. I mean, they seemed like real people.
As if they were reading it off the thing, right?
And you really got to hear And in some respects, you know, you had half the people loved it and half the people hated it. But at least you could see kind of why, and then you could see whether or not you would agree with one or the other.
Well, remember when we were in the store, we actually had this guy who was helping us with a stroller or something. And he said, you know, this is the one you want. And this woman walks by and says, well, I wouldn't take that one. And we said, why? And she said, well, it's really, really well built, but it is so heavy. She said, if I had to do it again, there's not a chance I would do that again. And you could see the guy was like, go away, stupid. Because clearly it was also more expensive, right? So he was just sort of like, oh, thank you for your
input. Yeah, I didn't find the people in the store helpful very much. That's why we're kind of reviewing the website and not
so much the store itself. I was trying to review both. I guess the store itself
We've been to the store a few times. And
the website was better.
And, it's just, you know, there's always coupons and the people there are very helpful.
But we should say the registry part itself, remember, when you go in, they actually give you this electronic device that you could go around the store and scan, and then that scans into the website. No, but this is really cool. Like, I was actually doing behind-the-back scans and, under-the-leg scans.
Greg and I tried to be, like, we didn't have a wedding registry, so Greg missed out on the going to Macy's and scanning, like, everything into the... Yeah. So all you married couples are like, well, didn't you already do that? No, we didn't. We thought we
and nobody
tried to be
did
creative.
It like I did it. Let's be fair.
Okay. you were a stallion. All right.
Thank you.
Moving on.
Right. So very useful website. Certainly something which... Now, I guess the big concern that people will have is... I don't think Babies R Us is necessarily out front in terms of social responsibility. I mean, they're not anti-social responsibility, but if you're looking for something which uses only recycled products or which uses only items that have come from fair trade countries or things like that. That's not going to be the case. It is, I'm afraid, a kind of mainstream store, means you're going to have some issues if you're really against the mainstream store.
And their selection still is limited.
Yeah.
And their search feature is okay. Sometimes it's not great. So, I mean, I wouldn't give this a huge high rating, but I would say that it's definitely something you should strongly consider, but I would still say maybe giving them like a 6.
Okay, I'm willing to do that. Say a 6 out of 10. And as I say, if there are other people out there who have other... Now, again, we're not going to turn to a baby show, but if you have other thoughts about other places where you've experienced the baby registry wonderment, you can tell us where that is and we'd be interested.
And there are
a lot of them. There are.
I mean, there are some websites... This is quite a common thing now with registries is you have this website that will compile all of these other websites in one.
Right.
And I just haven't found those to be highly successful. I don't know if other people have, but I haven't. But the concept is great because that means that you could choose an item off of that website and off of that website and off of that website and off of that website. So your registry is a combination of all these different registries.
Very cool.
But I've just never seen to be able to find one that really works and isn't faulty. Mechanically.
So one of you could design that and then we could review it and then you'd make millions and we would get some of that money and that way I could have 120 outfits washed by somebody else.
There you go. Good for full circle.
Thank you. I am a segue.
All right, and off
so
to
there the we go. So 6 subject. Out of 10 for Babies R Us. And the second thing we have on the docket for tonight is the World Series. Now, we had been thinking about the possibility of reviewing this before. We've reviewed the Super Bowl. We've reviewed a lot of other major sporting events. But it seemed appropriate insofar as the Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox, just won the World Series. I am a Red Sox fan. And I was very, very excited that the Red Sox finally won the World Series. Now, I recognize that many of our regular listeners are fans of other teams. We have some Yankee fans.
I know
that
finally they did it in 2004.
DI is a Mets fan. Well, they did it initially finally in 2004, and then again in 2007, the year that just passed. And what that the reason that that was great
the year that we're in right now.
The reason that that was great is because it means that no longer can the Yankee fans say, "Ah, wait another 86 years and you'll win another championship."
Okay.
Because of course the last one they won before 2004 was 1918, and so it was really great that finally here we had another 86 years. I mean,
okay.
So it was great that here we didn't have another 86 years to wait. So that's gone. Red Sox were at the top of the baseball world, and it was really great. They had a big parade in Boston, the whole business.
Okay, now moving on to World Series.
World Series itself.
Red Sox.
So the World Series is the culminating playoff event of the Major League Baseball season in the United States, and all the teams basically compete for, there are three divisions in each league, an American League and a National League, and the winner of each division plus a wild card team, which is the team with the best record besides those other three teams that make it, those four teams in each league get into a playoff system. They play each other, and then the winning team from each league, the winner of the American League and the winner of the National League, play each other in the World Series. And the World Series is a best out of seven affair. You have to win four total games out of seven to win the World Series.
Okay.
And the way the home field advantage is determined, which is different in this sport than in any other, is that the winner of the All-Star game, which is played between leagues and happens in the middle of the season, that winner actually gets the home field advantage. Now, for the Red Sox, it didn't matter because they swept the Colorado Rockies. It was, you know, not really that close to World Series. But there have been cases before where having the seventh game in your home ballpark could really make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so there's been some controversy as to whether it's a good idea to do it that way or whether you should just alternate it or mm-hmm. something else. But the World Series is really a major event because, you know, first of all, it's October. Most of baseball takes place during the summer. That's why the term the boys of summer.
Most of October baseball happens all freaking year long.
Clea, it's because the Red Sox are doing really well. So Clea would come home and she's like,
no,
you're watching another game?
No, I think anyone would agree,
another
unless
game?
They're a real baseball diehard fan, that the baseball season is too long compared to all the other sports.
162 games of glory. It's great.
From like April to October. That's a long time, Greg.
Yeah, but you know, I would rather have that than have basketball, which I'm not sure if it ever has an off season. Do you know basketball has started again in late October and basketball finishes in late June? So they have July, August,
okay, so
September, and like a half a month of October, and then you're back into
okay,
it again.
So that's
I mean, that's ridiculous. At least you have a 5 month off season with baseball, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, it's true. There are a lot of games. There probably are too many games, actually.
So let's do a callback to a previous thing that we reviewed.
Okay.
Eddie Izzard.
Yes.
Eddie Izzard has a joke where he says, "Congratulations, you guys! You know, you win the World Series every year." Because his joke is he's from England.
Right.
So the fact that
and it's not
United
really a
States,
world championship, yes.
Right,
yes.
Wins every year.
But I mean, what are they? Would they just call it the National Series? Or call it, I mean, the look, every
the
championship
American
game
series.
Is overwrought, okay? We have the Super Bowl. Why is it super? You know? I mean, I guess the NBA Finals are just the NBA Finals, but most of these things have some major term associated with it that's a little bit broader, you know? The World Cup. The World Cup isn't even the World Cup. There's some countries that don't participate.
Oh,
though.
But it's practically the world. Compared to the World Series, Greg, which is one country.
Okay, how about the Champions Cup, which is another soccer reference?
That's fine.
How do you know
that
they're champions?
Hmm? Oh, my God, Greg.
What if they're not? What about the losers? That's right. Don't have an answer for that. But the point is, I know what you're saying, but
yes.
But there it is a national thing. And they're really, I mean, I know that they've played baseball, they've and especially now, there's. But see, it's become, see, I don't know about that. It's become more of a world sport.
Yeah, but they don't
the Dominican,
participate.
Japan,
yes, but they don't participate in.
I beg your pardon. There is, they have now the World Baseball Classic, where actually you have nations competing against
That's
nations.
That's fine. The World Baseball Classic can be called the World Baseball Classic, but the World Series should not be called the World Series.
Why not? When you have people from Japan participating,
right,
people
because
from
they
the
have
Dominican,
to like come in and
Puerto
immigrate
Rico.
Here to be a part of the
no,
game.
They don't. The people, two of the pitchers for the Red Sox are Japanese. They haven't become, they're still Japanese citizens.
Yeah, like on work visas.
No,
what other game do you have to do?
It
do you
sound
have to get
like
a work
they
visa?
Had to sneak over the border like and to get work visas.
Just imagine if the Olympics, Greg,
yes.
Everyone had to get work visas to be part of the Olympics.
I don't really
and like
think
live
that
here year round.
Because the Olympics only are for 2 weeks. So I don't really think, I do not think it means what you think it means. I understand what you're saying. It's maybe a little bit misleading, but and of course not everybody likes not everybody likes baseball, of course, either. I mean, baseball is a game. It's really the only of the major sports that I can think of, except with the exception of cricket, with which it shares a certain amount of, there's some similarities there,
right,
that is not time driven, but as my as our friend Russ says, is event driven. Uh-huh. So it's about, you know, getting three outs in an inning. It's about three strikes on a batter, and it's not about the amount of time that it takes to get there. Whereas every other sport, you have a certain amount of, you know, 12 or 14 minutes in basketball per quarter, and then you've got like 16 minutes or 15 minutes for a football quarter and things like that. So everything else is time oriented and baseball is event oriented, and I think that sort of reflects its unique nature. It's more of a background sport, I would say. I think that's certainly true, but I think postseason baseball can really have a lot of drama, especially, you know, when you have a sport that takes often 3.5 hours to play a game. During a regular season, you could just think, oh, I can't believe that this is terrible. But when you think about every pitch in the World Series being significant, every, you know, the drama that builds. Okay. And, you know, think about J.D. Drew, example, in the American League Championship Series. J.D. Drew, who is a free agent that signed with the Red Sox, he's had a very disappointing season, and his son was very sick for a large part of the season, and that may have affected his play. In Game 6 of the American League Championship Series, he hit this grand slam that was this huge, huge thing to get the Red Sox to win, basically allowed them to get the margin they needed to win Game 6 and then win Game 7 and get to the World Series. Mm-hmm. And that was more dramatic because how long it took to build up and all that stuff.
Okay.
So its weaknesses can also be its strength, I guess. And that's magnified in the World Series.
Yeah, but let's get back to the World Series because we already reviewed baseball in episode 39.
Oh, okay, right.
So,
but the World Series itself as an event is very important because that it's also where you get the national broadcasters who get their national perspective. That is sometimes good and bad. It means you have to listen to Fox covering all the games, which is problematic. I don't like Fox in any other respect, and I don't like them anymore here as well because they just have a tendency to do goofy stuff and over-dramatize things, so that's kind of unfortunate as well. But still, you get to see, and especially the nation gets to look at the sport being celebrated in different venues. In this particular World Series, Colorado, which has never been in a World Series, was finally there, so you got to see the Rockies fans, you know, celebrating their team and all their tickets being bought up, and you got to see Coors Field, which is the Colorado home ballpark.
But it definitely, I mean, I appreciate, I don't know if other people, I appreciate it being 4 to 7 games. Do you know what I mean?
So that like, it's not just one and done like the NCAA basketball tournament. Right.
That's it. Right. And the end. And well, NBA finals, they have what's...
That's 4 to 7, too. Yeah.
Okay.
And same thing with hockey.
Right.
But for games like football or games like college basketball, yeah, it's one and done.
Right.
And that is a big issue because it means it's more... some people say the playoffs are a crapshoot regardless, but I think baseball is less so when you get to a longer series because you figure 7-game series, you have a good chance that the right team is going to win. Plus, that means you have strategy, too, right? You can think about bringing pitchers back on a couple days rest if you need to try to win a game because, you know, it's important to win this particular series. You wouldn't do that in the regular season. That's something which the World Series kind of dictates.
How expensive are tickets?
Really expensive. When I looked on StubHub for Red Sox tickets, the bottom level was about $700.
Yikes.
For games at Fenway. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Then that is one issue, is that getting tickets for these games is just absurdly expensive. But I would argue that it's the same thing if you went to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl's probably worse, if anything.
Well,
or
yeah,
if you're going to the NCAA championship.
One game.
Yeah, I mean,
we had
it's worse too.
A fellow comics husband, he had gone into the lottery for the Mets and won the lottery, and then he also put his sister in the lottery, and she had won too. So they were all set with like 8 tickets
until the Mets didn't,
and then
get there. Mm.
Sad. They were sad.
That's too bad. And I know that Drummond elected and other people, Mets fans that listen to us, are sad too. We felt bad for you. As I said, I have a soft spot in my heart for the Mets, but unfortunately, so what do you want to say for a rating for the World Series? Drama, passion, suspense.
I don't know, though, because someone might say, look, here, was this one all that dramatic?
That's because the Red Sox were out, you know, a better team than the Rockies. But
like,
there
part
have been
of me
many
feels
dramatic
like the playoffs,
World Series in the past.
Even in, like, the past, even, like, in 2004, were much more, you know, dramatic than the actual World Series itself.
Well, that's, yeah, well, that was because when the Red Sox came from 3 games down to beat the Yankees, the first time that had ever been done in professional sports, by the way, at least in professional baseball. I love saying that. Oh, that was so great. To beat the Yankees, that a lot of people said that after that, the World Series was kind of an afterthought because the Red Sox just steamrolled the National League.
Right.
The Cardinals in that case. Yeah, I mean, it may be
it's
the case, but there have been
team.
Other, yeah, it's too bad. But there have been other big time World Series games where there was 7 games. Kirk Gibson's dramatic home run over the Oakland A's over Dennis Eckersley.
All right.
So
I'm saying a 6.
A 6, huh?
Yep.
I don't know if I would go with that. I think I got to say a 7 for the World Series because of how dramatic the ultimate effect can be. So, we would say a 7 out of 10 for the World Series. If you haven't already, listen to our baseball in episode 39, listen to a review of that, and then definitely go and check out the World Series and see if you can get some coverage of it. Because,
and if people from you know, MLB are listening, we recommend that you change the name.
What name?
Or at least I am.
The World Series?
Yes.
To the National Series.
Or the Continent Series.
The Continental
or
Series.
The America Series.
The Not Rest of World Series.
The Just Capitalist Series.
That's what we want, babe, is more America-centric things. Definitely.
Maybe you could here you go.
Nope, here you go.
Every year, a different corporation can sponsor it. So it could be like the McDonald's series or the Starbucks series or the Babies R Us series. And they pay for the right to do that, which then allows the teams to lower the prices of tickets.
This home run brought to you by the co-sleeper from Babies R Us. It's the co-sleeper home run. Give that man a crib.
Speaking of broadcasts, that is the way it is, Ben, with baseball. It's like everything is like this home run brought to you by.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous.
This strikeout brought to you by. And it's by different companies.
That pitch speed brought to you by Comcast. Oh, yeah. It's
literally
absurd. Yeah.
So I think this World Series should be called something every year, and that they have to pay for it, and then with that money they lower ticket prices. That's my
great idea, and I'm sure they would do that, and not just.
And
keep
I might
more
increase
the money
that up to like an 8.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind. If you want an 8 from us, MLB, but C League, Commissioner of Baseball, if you're listening, this is how you do it. Okay, so 7 out of 10 for the World Series. Last on the docket for tonight is the Humanist Network News podcast, and this was submitted to us by Duncan Crary, who is one of the hosts of the show.
Sam Harris, I think that of all the speakers and all the events that have occurred so far, you made news with your talk last night. And I'd like to recap briefly and ask you some supplemental questions. So you mentioned to the crowd that atheist as a label was, it was a matter of convenience for you. People were labeling you as an atheist, and so you just said, okay, I'm an atheist. But you made a point about why you don't necessarily want to refer to yourself as an atheist. Could you recap that simply?
Sure. Yeah, well, I think it's a philosophical and a strategic error. I mean, as a matter of philosophy, atheism is not a worldview, and yet it's being construed as one by its opponents and attacked as a worldview. And people have many erroneous associations with what is entailed in not believing in God. And I think we collaborate in that misunderstanding by labeling ourselves in opposition to religion. We should notice that there are thousands, really an uncountable number of bad ideas that we all reject, and yet we don't label ourselves in opposition to them. It's something like astrology. We don't label ourselves non-astrologers. And I think we should take some instruction from that fact, because it would just be what we're doing is we're falling into the a trap, in some sense, set by religious people, because atheism as a term is so ill-dignified in our culture, and so it has such bad PR that to answer to the name of atheist, in some sense, you already wins the argument for your religious opponent. It shouldn't be so, but I think we have to be wise and realize that we have a terrible PR problem, and so the question is what to do instead. And I think we can use words like reason and evidence and common sense instead, and in the same way that we would repudiate the views of astrologers if they were gaining great traction in our culture, with words like reason and evidence, we can do the same for claims about religion and, you know, the magic origin of certain books, etc.
You can find this at humaniststudies.org/podcast, humaniststudies.org/podcast.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why is it that some websites are www and some aren't?
HTTP will get you to the same place. You could type in www and it'll be the same deal.
Okay,
could type in
but
HTTP
why are
review.
Some websites www and some
I
not?
Do not know that. I'm not sure.
Okay. Listeners, let me know.
Okay. We good?
So this is pretty much an NPR-style
show. It's a one-hour talk show which is created by the Institute for Humanist Studies. And yes, as Clea said, it comes out once a month. It's an hour long. And they now are up to 24 episodes. They've been doing this for 2 years. And as Clea said, it's very, very much like NPR. The feel of it is like NPR. You
it's
have
like
two hosts.
Justice. What was it? Justice
Talking.
Justice Talking.
Which is an NPR show.
All Things
All things considered. Very much in that
very
vein.
Very much like that.
Even up to and including, you know, like little music clips, like, you know, bumpers that bridge from one to another. Yep. Very much the same
kind
of thing.
And a series of different interviews of different people on a particular topic.
Yep. And actually, I just looked. Humanist Network News promo, 5 minutes and 30 seconds. That feels NPR to me, too. we'll do a promo. It's only 5 minutes long, people.
Stay with it.
Hang in there. You got to want it. But their website is connected to the Institute for Humanist Studies. And I should say, first of all, these people get some serious people to interview. Humanism, for those of you who don't know, I assume most of our listeners will, but humanism, as they describe it on there, is a philosophy of life inspired by humanity and guided by reason. Humanists strive to lead ethical and joyful lives without supernatural belief in gods, heaven, or hell. Interestingly, my father,
was a humanist, right?
And they often, I've heard people refer to on this show and elsewhere, to the term of secular humanism, and that always used to annoy him because he used to argue that humanism is itself secular.
Right.
That you can't have a religious humanism. I'm not sure if I believe that.
Well,
it's
like people saying they're hopeful agnostics. It shows a certain lack of misunderstanding about the term agnostic.
Because I classify myself to a degree as kind of a hopeful agnostic, as a Unitarian Universalist myself. But in each of their shows, they'll cover humanist conferences and things like that. But they get some big time people, okay? Show number 18, as an example. On show number 18, they covered the ceremony. It was at the humanist chaplaincy at Harvard. I'm not really sure how you can have a humanist chaplain, but let that go. Which honored Salman Rushdie with the Outstanding Lifetime Achievement Award in Cultural Humanism. And they interviewed Salman Rushdie, okay? The guy who wrote the Satanic Verses, and there was the fatwa about him and so forth. They interviewed U.S. Representative Pete Stark, who is the highest elected official in the United States to openly acknowledge he does not believe in a supreme being. They interviewed Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, who's, I believe, wrote the book The End of Faith, which is a very famous book. So these people interview some serious people that they can get on their show in regards to humanism. I guess I want to say a couple things about, and I want to hear Clea's take on this. I want to say a couple things about the philosophy quickly, and then a couple things about the show. I'll start with the show first. I think the show is extremely well produced.
Yeah.
The audio quality is exceptional, and the hosts, I think, strike just the right balance. They're pleasant. You know, they're definitely reasonable people, as you might expect from humanists. In fact, they're somewhat more reasonable sometimes than the people they interview, as we'll talk about when we get to one group in particular.
Although they don't call them on it.
No, but I guess their job is to sort of to interview, not to sort of, you know, make claims about things, because they're the Institute for Humanist Studies, right?
I only listened to two. Greg listened to more than me. Did you actually hear the female interviewing anyone?
No, actually, I didn't. I listened to about three or four, but I listened to the entire thing, so I didn't have more that we couldn't listen to like 12 hours.
Well, they're an hour each.
Because they're an hour each, but I listened to a little bit of Dar Williams. My mother is actually a big fan of Dar Williams as a folk singer. I didn't know that she was a humanist, but that was there as well.
That was one thing, is it seemed like pretty much it was the two of them talking, and then it will go into Duncan interviewing someone.
Interviewing, yeah. I don't know how much she interviews or not, but... but they had a good chemistry with each other, I thought, and they did a very good job at introducing different things. And I think they did a good job, too, at staying out of the way of some of this stuff where they, you know, obviously they are themselves humanists, but they don't interject in the way that this one group we'll talk about in a minute interjects their own point of view, which I find much more appealing. You know, if I wanted to learn about humanism, I would feel comfortable doing it from these people, you know what I mean, without feeling as if I was getting preached to, which I think is good. And a lot of the interviews were very entertaining. I mean, Salman Rushdie's interview was entertaining. The interview with Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris. Hitchens came across as about as pompous as I would have expected him to come across. I've seen Hitchens interviewed, I think, on The Daily Show, and pretty much the same thing. You know, he's very self-assured, but that's fine. He's a smart guy. And I think they clearly know their stuff also, which I think is a big thing as well. The philosophy part is the thing that I wanted to take a minute to talk about, because I noticed this especially in episode 24, which is their most recent one, October 24th, where they interviewed Sam Harris, Richard Dawkins, Daniel Dennett, and Christopher Hitchens, as I mentioned. Basically, Sam Harris, who's the author of The End of Faith, had mentioned in this lecture at a particular conference, the Atheist Alliance International, I didn't know that existed, that they shouldn't identify with the atheist label. And his argument, in part, was that it's dangerous to do that because you create, you know, there's such a stigma about atheism in America right now that it basically keeps people from understanding or listening to your point of view, because it's such a turnoff, that word.
And the concept is you don't need to call yourself an atheist because you don't believe in religion doesn't mean you have to give yourself a term, right? I don't believe in you know, astrology, he said, another example he gives, just because you don't believe in astrology doesn't mean you have to term yourself something
right.
non-astrologist.
Or more specifically, even they said, you know, an atheist, meaning not believing in a theocracy or a theist, not believing in a god, a theist who believes in a god. It's sort of absurd to call it that when you don't have an a-Zeusist, right? If you don't believe in Zeus, or a-Thorist if you don't believe in Thor.
Right.
And so there were different people who reacted to it. But the group that I had a problem with, and this is sort of the point I wanted to make, was this group called the Rational Response Squad, who, from what I could tell, were two young people whose job, I gather, is to go onto YouTube and to make websites and to go to different places where
they're young activists.
Where they respond, and they're young activists, and they sound young in their outlook as well. And one of the things I found interesting about it was humanism talks about the importance of rationality and reason and compassion. I myself don't necessarily subscribe to a lot of the tenets of humanism, but because I'm not sure that I believe that there isn't a God, because I think it's difficult to tell whether there is or not, and there's a whole lot of reasons for that. I think it's very dangerous for humanists to be as strident and as, let's say, dogmatic in rejecting dogma as these people clearly were. At the end of the interview, where they were sort of joking around, and it was all kind of tongue-in-cheek, cynical, we listen a lot to NPR and carry around tote bags with, you know, Barnes & Noble on them, you know what I mean? Those kinds of people. At the very end of this interview, they said, you know, we just want to say to the humanist listeners, because they were being interviewed by Duncan, that if you guys want to rename yourselves the chicken bleep atheists, we would certainly understand that. Okay, so basically what they've done is, they've said, we think that it's fine to call yourself an atheist. We totally disagree with Harris's point of view, because we think you should be able to fight and destroy religion. That was their term, destroy religion, and just remove it and eliminate it. A lot of war talk, I find, in these people, and I'm not sure why. Mm-hmm. And then they proceed to say, because we want to destroy the dogma of these people with the intolerant dogma of calling you chicken bleep atheist because you don't happen to believe in what we believe. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I find that as disturbing, if not more so, because you cloak yourself in this disingenuous position that you are somehow more tolerant than the other side, and then espouse just as intolerant positions. For my friends, I have friends who are Catholic, they would certainly not have anything to find with you, and it strikes me that I shouldn't have to be, you know, feel as if I am attacking other people to feel as if I'm being truly humanistic in my outlook. Well, I just found that outrageous, frankly, and very immature.
The way I saw it, it was purely immature. It was that they were there. They sounded like high schoolers saying, yep, hey man, don't think take things so seriously, you know? And they dropped F-bombs and different things.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, you know, if you're going to be engaging in a serious theological,
if you want to call yourself the rational response team,
you need to understand the other side's point of view, and saying them just don't take things so seriously obviously shows that you do not understand their point of view at all.
Exactly. And defining yourself against them, of course, means you're just as dominated by them as you would be if you ignored them. I mean, their response then is to make it seem as if they loathe these people. And I find hatred and loathing very uncomfortable in the mouths of people who are running from it precisely because they fear that organized religion preaches hatred and loathing. And, you know, well, I don't see the difference.
Well,
dogma
that's the interesting thing, though, about this book, The End of Faith. We actually had been discussing this earlier this week because my friend Catherine, who has been on this podcast before, has been reading this book. And she hasn't finished it, but she has read it, and it did spark a discussion because his whole premise is that by being moderates, by being religious moderates and allowing extremist behavior and allowing extremist religions, we are part of the problem because we shouldn't be allowing it. We shouldn't be allowing religion, indoctrinated religion. And so the idea is, yes, as moderates, we don't want to be hypocritical. So we say, we want you to be accepting, and therefore we are going to accept you. And he would say, no, we shouldn't be accepting them because their behavior is not acceptable at all.
Yeah.
And therefore, yes, in a way, it's creating an instance where we would be hypocritical, where we would say, you should be more tolerant, your doctrine is wrong, and therefore, since your doctrine's wrong, we're not going to tolerate you or your behavior.
To me, the amount of people that I've talked to and met, the students that I teach on a daily basis, the danger, the evil, is extremism and fanaticism. That right. is the evil.
And that's what he's saying.
And extremism and fanaticism, in opposing extremism and fanaticism, is just as dangerous to me. I understand the point that he's making, and I think it's a good one, but I think that it's one that is limited by the fact that in extremely reacting, in fanatically reacting, in calling people who don't agree with you chicken bleep atheists, you are creating the exact form of hatred, of denial, of dogma that these people fled in the first place. And I think that that is just as bad.
Okay.
The evil is dogma to me. And so that is something which I was very uncomfortable with. And let me just say, by the way, that's not Duncan doing that. I mean, one of the nice things was they came back and they didn't attack them. They didn't do anything. They just kind of put it as a part of their overall, you know, sort of mission. And I mean, I guess we could argue maybe they should have said something either way, but I personally liked the fact that they weren't going to jump in there. They don't have to do it. I will. I reacted poorly to that because I think that's just
as bad
as the fundamentalism from the other side.
So. Again, but I didn't get that aspect of the website that they were saying, Greg, that they were putting down atheists.
What do you mean?
That want to call themselves specific different things.
No. They were putting down humanists. They said, if you humanists want to rename yourselves chicken bleep atheists, the point being that it's like atheists that don't really believe in atheism and you want to be sort of get along well with everybody. These are the people that would call themselves NPR atheists.
Oh,
you know
so
what
they
I mean?
They're saying since you're being, by not calling yourself atheists, you're calling yourself humanists.
You become chicken bleep atheists.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and I think I find that offensive. And not only offensive, I find it completely buying into the same thing which they rejected in organized religion. What's the difference? You know? So to me, it's exactly the same level of hatred either way. And I would prefer a much more rational response that you get from Duncan and Jess, the two hosts, than you get from these two who know it all because they're 25. You know what I mean? And or however old they are. You know, and that is a province of the young. I mean, the young act that way, that self-assured way. But I think it's especially dangerous when you're calling yourself the Rational Response Squad. But anyway, that was just one show, and it was certainly I mean, one of the things that Duncan said is that we try to deal with these things in a thought-provoking way. I think they absolutely do that. And I think the website is neatly laid out and so forth. I guess, you know, it's an hour long. It's not something where you can just sort of download something quickly and listen to just a part of it.
Right.
I think you have to devote a little bit of time to it because of that kind of NPR feel. You can download it. You can play it on their website. All of that stuff is very well done. So I think that the website itself is very well designed.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention they even have an advice columnist called Sweet Reason who they'll interview, and she'll answer questions. Like someone had a question about how do I come out of the closet about being an atheist, and so she had all this advice.
And they have transcripts of the entire
Oh, yeah, and they have transcripts. That's awesome. We need to figure out a way to do that. Can you imagine someone transcribing our show? That would be sweet. The same person who would wash our 120 clothes of, you know, the same person. But anyway.
How would they transcribe my laugh?
Just a lot of waveforms up and down. That's what I do. But anyway, so very well put together website and show, but it's limited a little bit by its format. This is not the kind of thing you're going to say, hey, check this out. Just listen to these couple of minutes.
Not everyone's got
it. Not everyone, but I think they have like 3,000-4,000 people. Yeah, I mean, if you are a supremely religious Christian, you're not going to like the show. But if you're somebody like us who does not reject religion outright and yet is not sure about the humanist perspective necessarily, this is the kind of show that could appeal to you. I don't think you, I don't know about you, I wasn't repulsed by this.
No, definitely.
At all.
I mean,
I found
I'm definitely going to send Catherine to this website because I think she'd find it very interesting.
That's
since
true.
She's, you know, reading this book and thinking about this kind of stuff.
Yep. So I think it's interesting as well. What about a rating?
7?
Yeah, either a 7 or an 8. I think for the audience that it's trying to reach. I mean, and I think not only that, I mean, it's well constructed. I think, you know, the hour long limit may be an issue, but that's not, I mean.
All right, 8.
I guess I would say an 8 out of 10. I think I like these guys. I think they do a good job with the site and a good job with their show, and I encourage them to keep it up, and you should go check it out. As I say, even if you are religious but open-minded, it would be like we think of ourselves.
Regardless, you got some really great interviews.
It would be interesting to listen and kind of get a feel for it.
Yeah, and they like to pride themselves on asking all of these people questions that they've never gotten before.
Yep.
And so for that reason, you know, and NPR does try to do that too. But for that reason, it would be good to go and listen to what these people have been able to elicit from the interviewers.
Good people to get. So an 8 out of 10 for the Humanist Network News podcast. Okay, that's going to do it for us for this week. We want to thank you guys for listening again, another week of our show. And next week is going to be our
Big
50th
50.
Show. And we have not yet decided. We may do a retrospective.
No.
We may
We've decided.
Like,
We're going to review 50 items. times in 30 minutes.
Tremendous. Great.
So we need your suggestions, but please make them very simple suggestions.
Yes.
Because again, 50 in 30 minutes.
Make them simple
minutes,
enough that Clea can do them by herself, because I clearly will not 50, be a part of this 50.
Do the math, Greg. 30 minutes
times 50.
30 minutes divided by 50.
That's it. What is
so
that?
So
we have 0.6 of a minute. Great job. That's great. We can't even figure it out. Here's the point.
We have to do 1 2/3 items for every minute.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So that's not too bad. That's totally doable, Greg. Totally doable.
Next week is going to be a fun show. Make sure you check it out. Thanks a lot for listening, you guys. We will see you next week upon further review. I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See ya.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!